Here we are. Welcome back to another wonderful week of cannabis news, of the absolute pleasure and privilege to just be on camera with the Argentinian action figure himself, Javier Hase. What's up, man?
How are you doing today, Mr.
Great.
Elliot Lane?
I'm doing great. You know, this is my last full week as a resident of New York City. Ooh. I am moving officially down to North Carolina next week, hence why I look like I'm in a prison or dungeon. I mean, I could shift my camera and you'd see bars on the window because I'm on the first floor of a New York City apartment, and welcome to New York. But that being said, man, it's a busy time in my life, but I always love taking a break and chatting cannabis. Y'all, if you are here for the first time, drop a one in the chat. If you are here as a regular listener, or you've been here before, drop a two. We always love to know who is listening. Let's get through some news. We have two killer guests today. So first and foremost, we are going to live interview with Dan Humiston. He is the head man, the CEO, the founding partner, or not partner, founder of PodCon X, an awesome, awesome network of podcasts. I can't wait to get his perspective on a number of items there. And then secondly, we have an interview that I did with Abner Curtin on Friday about his first quarter performance. As well as he touches on MedMen, he touches on a lawsuit of sorts. So a lot coming from that interview as well. But Javier,
cool,
throwing it to you, man, take over. Tell us what's on your mind right now.
There's an interesting study that was reported by Stanford Medicine. They looked at cannabis and how it affects risk of premature heart attacks. And they found that THC, or, you know, the psychoactive component of cannabis, does cause inflammation in the cells in the heart, in the interior of the blood vessels, and can lead to higher risk for heart attacks. What's interesting too is they discovered a small molecule called ganistine, which is found in soy and fava beans, that could block this inflammation. So we might be seeing some kind of a mix in the future. I don't know. What do you think? Do you envision a near future where we see cannabis products infused with this molecule from soy?
Here's what I'd say. I would be absolutely shocked if the cannabis industry even acknowledged this study. That's my personal opinion, man. If you want whether it should be, that'd be cool. Will some people use this to, you know, to infuse that and be like, this is actually a healthier alternative of marijuana or of utilizing cannabis in one fashion or another? Never. But I don't foresee this. These are huge numbers. This study was huge. 500,000 people, 11,000 of which smoke more than once a month, reported in this study. And these numbers have to be acknowledged. I just don't see them acknowledging it.
We need to. I know I will get quite a bit of hate on social media for sharing this and even for covering it. But the fact remains that we can't ignore it, especially when it comes from a credible source, as Stanford is. It's interesting to start to really understand the good and the bad in cannabis, right? We can't be biased in that way and go like, okay, cannabis is all good.
Agreed.
Really great. But yeah, we need to acknowledge the risks.
Well, and that's how you develop a product that is consistent, is quality. That is a true CPG brand, in my opinion, is something that takes into consideration all of the pros and cons. Of the plant itself, of the plant medicine, of the plant product, whatever you want to utilize your business for. But that being said, you know, I mean, I haven't seen any of the major businesses acknowledge this yet. And this has been out for several days now. So we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens. But unless this equates like lung cancer to cigarettes, which it's not yet. You know, it'll be hard pressed, I think, to get a big MSO to acknowledge that. Anyway, I'm in agreement with you, to clarify, and nobody's going to hate you on social media except for Mitch. what else, Javi? What else is on your mind, man?
Oakley Cannabis, that is CBWTF on the OTC, released its financial results. The company is feeling the impact of price competition in the vape market. However, Pablo Swanich, our good friend at Cantor Fitzgerald, still believes the stock has potential, maintains an overrate rating on the stock, and a price target of 20 Canadian cents.
Can I ask you a question about these earnings?
Yep.
You know, one of the main points I've seen a lot in Oxley's releases, and honestly, most of the Canadian licensed producers, is their claim for some sort of top five market share or top 10 market share in the country. And everybody has a different name that they have the top market share for. And Oxley's was top in cannabis 2.0 products. But then my mind goes to, whoa. That's inclusive of gummies, right? And edibles. And wouldn't Indiva lead that? I'm very, like, honestly, for me, these market share claims in these earnings reports, yeah. I want your perspective because you've been looking at them a lot longer than I have. And it just, to me, what should we as investors be looking at when we look at market share?
I honestly don't like those claims generally, unless they can be easily proven. I don't like estimates either, to be honest, right? Like every estimate about the potential market size has a bunch of assumptions. I am not a big fan of these claims either, right? Because each company will go to their own data and choose the words carefully so that they are the first, the best, the biggest. To me, there's few measures that are hard to dispute. One being market cap, revenue, you know, net profit.
The tax number is big right now too, especially in the US. But anyways, keep going.
I mean, that is about it, right? Like that is... those are the only measures that I really see that are worth something, right? In terms of market leadership. Then the rest, it's fine. You know, it's one of the top 10. It's like, okay, what does that mean? Are you one of the top 10 with what percentage, what share, right, of the market? The market is so fragmented and so many different companies have an important piece of the market.
So we obviously have a ton of earnings reports. We cover them all on Benzinga.com/cannabis. If you're interested, I think Green Lane reported, Planet 13 reported end of yesterday. We covered them. I think you had a Halo Cannabis report today as well. But one last bit of something for me that I have a question for. What do you take from Akerna's start of this review process they're doing with JMP Securities? Their CFO is leaving. I'm a big fan of John, to be honest. I love John. He's leaving to pursue other opportunities. Their president and COO is converting over to a special advisor to Jessica. What is there anything that you think we should keep an eye out for when looking at KERN?
I mean, honestly, I would keep a close eye on how they restructure. This could be a change for the better or for the worse, right? Like every management change, it can bring new life to a company that in certain ways needs it. So it's a matter of really keeping an eye out on or an eye on the new assignments and their performance. I would give them 3 to 6 months, and it should be clear if they've had a positive impact or a negative impact. Of course, there are market dynamics, there are external factors that the company cannot control. At the same time, I have to acknowledge that the fact that there is such a big management shakeup with two of the top leaders leaving or changing positions is somewhat concerning.
Look, at Mitch in the chat. I agree. I'm a big fan of Jessica. I think Jessica is an awesome, awesome CEO. And her doing this could be her looking at the market and looking how her stock has been not doing great for a while now. And maybe this is her answer or the company's answer, but it's hard to look at this in a positive light. But we'll see. I think, like you said, we need to give it some time.
Indeed. I have three rapid fire items, and we can get to the interview. Four, actually. One is go to Benzinga.com/cannabis to check out Sundial Growers' earnings. You're always asking about Sundial, S-N-D-L. In the chat, you have all the details. Benzinga.com/cannabis. Big shout out to the entire team. Maureen, Nina, Elena, Natan, Nico, Fermin. You know, they do an amazing job. Vuk. Covering all the cannabis news happening every day. There's about 40 articles every day on Benzinga.com/cannabis. Having said this, three big news items. Again, go check out the details on Benzinga.com/cannabis. One is a report that says eliminating cultivation taxes in California could double the state's cannabis revenue by 2024. Actually, increases by 123%. The taxes right now are so high that they could go as high as $90 per ounce. That is crazy. Another one, the FDA is warning about THC copycat edibles, pointing that children could be in, like, especially in danger. Copycat edibles, for those who don't know, are cannabis edibles that emulate as closely as possible mainstream brands. So anything from Wonka, sweets to cereal, they will imitate it, and some people get confused. Last but not least, Method Man out of the famous Wu-Tang Clan launches brand Tikal in Michigan through a partnership with Glorious Cannabis Co. Awesome brand. Go check it out if you're in Michigan. Don't miss out on Method Man's weed. It's awesome.
Awesome. Great rapid fire, Javi. That was actually some good headlines there. I'm with Money Mitch. Do we need to hand out samples? Let's go. GTBIF, how about this? We'll come back to GTI, as always, after our next interview. Shall we, Javi?
Yes, sir.
Let's get to it. I'm pumped for this. Please welcome founder and CEO of PodCon X, Dan Humiston. Let's bring him on over, Aaron. Welcome to it, Dan. How's it going, man?
It's going great. Guys, thanks for having me on the show.
Oh,
thank you for joining us. This is the dad in a cannabis family.
Who was first? You, right? Like, you were like, Carson can follow. I am the trailblazer here, right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I started looking into it in 2012. So she was still in high school or she might've been in college at the time.
Wow.
But yeah, I started in 2012. As a matter of fact, I remember when I told her she was studying abroad, and we took a trip to, we were in Greece, and it was one of those islands in Greece, and we were walking along the street, and I said, "Hey, what do you think about this?" And she looked at me like, "Are you out of your mind? This is, you know," like I said, 2012. She was like, "What, are you crazy?" And,
here we are today.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's awesome, man. So tell us.
What were you doing before cannabis? Wait, I'm very curious as to why that response. Because again, Carson at that time was like 22 years old. Like,
no. She was still in college, so she was probably
even younger. My point being, you know, you'd expect a college kid to go like, "Oh, weed, awesome, go, dad." You know. So what were you doing before that? That was so surprising to her to learn.
I owned a chain of tanning salons. I started tanning in 1985, and I had
all about getting toasted.
Yeah, I had all getting baked. Yeah, we were the largest tanning at one point. We were the largest tanning salon chain in the country, but the biggest one in New York State by far. And so she grew up in a tanning. So we were a little bit out there. I mean, as far as like. You know, it wasn't the most, there was a lot of skepticism and a lot of people looked at us a little funny when we didn't tell them what we did. And so she was kind of used to that. And then, but I mean, I was still in the business. So the idea of going into something else, starting something else was, I think that's why she was looking at me like, "What are you, nuts?"
And was it PodCon X in 2012? Was that?
No,
jump into it.
I started the Cannabis World Congress Business Expo. So it was a trade show. And then I sold that show and the CWCB Expo. I no longer involved with that. And then I had some time, wasn't sure exactly what to do, but wanted to keep my hand in the business and started a podcast. And that's how it started. Just was as simple as a podcast. And then a couple friends said, "Hey, we want to do a podcast. Can you help us?" And before you knew it, I had half a dozen of them that I was helping. You know, the funny thing is, back then, even now, it was like so hard to get advertisers because they'd say, you know, "How many listeners do you have?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, but they're super loyal." And they'd be like, "Yeah, but you don't have a million listeners." And I'm like, "I know, but they're super loyal. They'll buy your stuff." One day I was just talking to them and they said, "Well, could you get us on everybody's show?" And I'm like, "Yeah." It was like, duh. And that was really the genesis of it. I was like, "Sure, we can." And then before you know it, now we're up to, I think we're at 35 shows that we're either producing or on our network. And we just, you know, we sell the entire network and advertisers are like, "Yeah, this is great. I don't have to deal with 35 individual podcasts. So just put, you know, we buy one ad and plays across the network.
That's fantastic. So is it all cannabis driven, I'm assuming?
Yeah, cannabis and hemp shows.
Fantastic. So what, from your perspective, you know, where do you go more? Is it finance? Is it product driven? Specifically to what you do? Because you and I spoke on MJ Bulls, which is more financially driven, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the show that we started. I started MJ Bulls, which is just about raising money or investing money. So and it's pretty easy to find guests because everybody's raising money and the people that aren't raising it are the investors. So that was how MJ Bulls started. And, you know, it's almost 4 years now. I think we're closing in on 400 episodes. And, you know, I think I'm booked all the way into July right now with interviews. Cause like I said, everybody's raising money. So it's, you know, and it's fun because I get a chance to talk to a lot of really inspiring entrepreneurs that have some really, really good ideas. They just need a little, you know, a little boost. They need somebody to give them that little extra kick in the pants to get them over the hump. And you know, sometimes it works. Sometimes being on our show is just all they needed to get their financing.
What are some of the advertisers that you're seeing? Are they all cannabis companies or are you also targeting mainstream companies that want to go after cannabis consumers, right? I'm hearing a little bit of both in general in the industry.
Yeah, mostly our focus is just on the cannabis industry right now. I suspect that at some point down the road, Domino's or Doritos or Uber or somebody like that will call us. But we have enough business right now within the cannabis industry. I mean, as you know, nobody can advertise. You can't get on Google Ads. You can't get on Facebook. You can't get on Twitter. There's no place to advertise. So cannabis or podcasts are one place where people can say what they want. No censorship. We can put the ads out. So I think that's one of the attractions. You know, there's no other options and they can say whatever they want.
Does that drive a premium in pricing when it comes to the fact that there are no other options? Do you, I mean, if you compare, you know, what cannabis companies are paying to be on PodConnex programs versus a mainstream advertiser, do you see a higher rate just because there's like limited supply for you know, the content side of things?
Well, it's not like we hold them over a barrel. But yeah, I would say that we can charge, our CPMs are much higher than the industry standard or the industry average. But part of that is because we have, they're all niche podcasts and the listeners are very loyal to the host. So if the host does a host read, it's a real, it may not be an exact endorsement, but I think that drives a lot more sales because it's as opposed to just a generic ad. Go to zip.com and listen to this Joe Rogan show and you hear about a zip.com commercial. You're like, you know, does that drive me to buy it versus if you have one of the, you know, a host that you're intimate with and you hear every week, I think that's one of the reasons that we can get a little higher CPM. CPM is cost per thousand. And for our listeners that aren't familiar with it, that's downloads. So we the industry average is, I think it's $25 per thousand downloads, and we do quite a bit higher than that. But still, again, not that we're holding anybody over a barrel. It's just that I think we have a really a unique product, and I think that's why we are able to achieve that higher CPM.
You are such an interesting guest on multiple levels, in the sense that marketing is such an issue for cannabis brands and companies, and you provide an outlet for it. But then you also have a perspective, you know, by talking to these cannabis companies. Ideally, you know, we can maybe say similar to us, but I'd love to hear from you. Is there a perspective or something that sticks out, you know, right now talking to companies? And we'll stick to the financial sense, maybe from MJ Bulls, if you don't mind, you know, that really sticks out to you that you've heard a lot or just is something that rings with you.
Well, I think, unfortunately, it's the cash is starting to dry up. I think a lot of the VC money is not available. Maybe it's not available at the multiples or at the evaluation that the companies are used to, or, you know, maybe miss that boat. the really high valuations those days. Unfortunately, I'm afraid they're gone. And, you know, but for an investor standpoint, I think they've come back down to earth. And actually right now I feel like, you know, they may even be lower and going lower. And that's, you know, it's too bad because a lot of these, you know, a lot of people held off on raising money. They bootstrapped it. And then when they're finally, when they're ready and they have, you know, something, or that's about the same time that the prices go down and also it dries up. I mean, it's tough to raise money right now. I feel for these, a lot of these companies.
No, I agree. I agree. Well, have you seen any specific reasons why investors are bullish, or why some investors are still bullish and investing into specific businesses? Like, what are you hearing on that front? Like, what are the most investable businesses right now from your perspective?
Well, every investor that we talk to is always talking about brands, brand, 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 brand. So they're always talking about brand, but I almost to a point where I'm almost like, well, just, you know, that's the talking points. And I'm not positive that that's exactly what, you know, that's the truth, or if that's what everybody's saying, so that's what they're saying. But I hear that almost everybody that we're talking to is, we're looking for brands. We're looking for brands. And also, and you know, unfortunately, the limited license states, I mean, everybody's gaga about investing in somebody that has a license in a limited license state. I understand why, but you're also missing out on a lot of really exciting ancillary businesses that, you know, are really, I think they're going to change not just the cannabis industry, but the industries outside of the cannabis company, because they get a chance to incubate their business without competitors coming in from all the other places. I mean, I'll use my daughter's company for an example. You know, the big recruiting companies aren't touching cannabis right now. So she had an opportunity to really explode her company without having, you know, Indeed staring over, you know, knocking her down every time and I see that with a lot of the ancillary companies. And I'm unfortunately, I'm afraid that a lot of the investors, I just don't know if they're as sexy. And I think that's why a lot of them, you know, they don't have the good story that they can share with their LPs about an ancillary company. But, you know, you tell somebody about a limited license that's really more sexy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and kind of wrapping up here for me, I'd love to hear from you about the other parts of the industry that your network covers. You know, what else could we go to PodConX and learn about in the cannabis space outside of finance?
it's crazy how eclectic it is. I mean, I'll start right off by talking about the Deadhead Cannabis Show. I mean, it's a show that's similar to yours. It's a weekly show. They talk about the news of the week, and then they roll right into the Grateful Dead. And there's a connection between cannabis and Grateful Dead. And, you know, the listeners just love it. They talk about concerts, and these guys, I mean, it's scary how much stuff they know about the Grateful Dead. I mean, it's almost unhealthy. No, it's almost unhealthy.
Are relentless.
It's unhealthy. I think sometimes I'm like, are you guys serious? They name dates and they're like, oh yeah, that date we saw, it was a great Franklin Tower or some, you know, scar, whatever. And I'm like, whoa, this is scary.
Wow.
It kind of gives you a range. We just launched a new show called Terps in the City with Cheryl Murray Powell, whom you may have had on your show before. She's just really done a great job, but she's moving to New York City, and she's basing the whole show on, you know, the New York, how everything's unfolding in New York. So it's, you know, kind of gives you a perspective on that. And then, you know, we have a couple good hemp shows. We have Hemp Barons and Let's Talk Hemp, run by two really, you know, like I would say founding fathers in the hemp industry.
Yeah.
Joy Beckerman and Morris Beagle. Morris has the NOCO and a few of those, you know, so he's that's where you'd know him from. And then we have hemp. Then we have Pot Moms, which is just a fun show where she tests out strains, or the Cannabis Podcast, same thing. Gary's up in Canada. And he's just knocking it out of the park up in Canada. So it's just like I said, nice. Like a really well-rounded group of people. And for me, it's great because they're all really cool. Like everybody's really nice. Everybody shares, and we promote. They put their everyone puts their promo on everybody else's show. Like we run it at the end and everybody's real fair, real cooperative about sharing information. There's no like proprietary bent to anybody. It's everybody's really, really laid back about that. And it's just, you know, it's fun.
That's awesome. Awesome. Dan Humiston, founder and CEO of PodCon X. Check it out. I was on there. I mean, it's a really an incredible network you've built.
Oh, yeah.
Marketing tool for the cannabis industry and just a source of information, y'all. You come to Benzinga for information. If there are other sources we can recommend, PodCon X is one of them. So thank you, Dan, so much for being on here, my friend.
Oh, my pleasure. Speak to you soon.
Yes, sir. Definitely looking forward to it. All right. Honestly, I really enjoy the information Dan puts out, the content he puts out. It's a lot of fun. And I feel like mainstream media just misses that part of information so much as making it enjoyable to digest. So hopefully we do that to an extent. But outside of that, Javier, any other news items? Let's take 2 minutes before we run the interview with Abner. Anything you want to touch on quickly?
I want to shout out Lord Byron and Abel Matthew, who are super active in the chat today. I love the conversation. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to follow it. I will go back to the video and check it out. I see you're having some very interesting discussions around Trulieve, around pricing. Very cool stuff. I don't think I got much more on my end, really. There's a Senate candidate called John Fetterman who campaigned using T-shirts saying it's high time to legalize cannabis.
Yeah, he was just on the
like
news.
A fun.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean,
item.
It's nice to see other mainstream politicians jump on the bandwagon positively because we still see those who are against it for whatever reason. Headlines more than anything, I think.
Yeah, I don't know, like Schwa's earnings, Tilt Holdings.
Ooh,
earnings.
No. Here's one. Let's take 1 minute to hear your thoughts on Pablo Zwanich's note on Columbia Care. Not positive, but it is tied to Cresco Labs. So any thoughts you want to pass on to our audience about those two tier one stocks?
Let me bring it up. not really. I don't have it like off the top of my mind. We do know that Pablo is pretty bullish on Columbia Care. He is overweight on the stock, price target of $5.10. Having said this, he does highlight the importance of the Cresco deal and the future of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Benzinga.com/cannabis for any more details. What did you have in mind? What caught your eye? Is it like the Jersey thesis or?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'll be honest, Columbia Care has always been one of my favorites in this industry. I'm a big Nick Vita fan. I'm a big fan of how they get the data and survey it before their customers buy, and they create a unique experience. I think it drives basket sizes. It drives retention and customer loyalty, and I always love that aspect of data-led sales for Columbia Care. I wasn't thrilled that they were being acquired, to be quite frank with you. So I just think it's interesting to keep up with them. Obviously, we do want these M&A transactions to be somewhat of a fuel to this industry. So I'm not voting against it or anything like that. But I'm a big fan of Columbia Care.
Not terrible if you're a Columbia Care shareholder either. So
exactly. I don't think there's a lot of negatives to it per se. I just love Columbia Care. That being said, let's get to the interview. Javier, always a pleasure. My brother in a different country. But we get to do this twice a week. Everybody, thanks so much for tuning in. Tune into this earnings video. We hear some MedMen chatter. We hear some lawsuit against the federal government chatter. We got some really good stuff at Abner Curtin, CEO of Ascend Wellness Holdings, AAWH on the OTC. Aaron, let's run it. Hello, my friends. We have another special episode. It's what we do. We got Abner Curtin, CEO of Ascend Wellness. They are OTC listed AWHH, a major multi-state operator. Aaron, let's bring him on over. We're going to dive into their earnings report and everything else that's happening in your life. I don't know how you have time to breathe, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Elliot. I don't know about everything in my life, but I'm happy to discuss.
I just want to know, you know, what's in your bar behind you, what you had for breakfast. I mean, we'll go into it all here, but let's start with how you feel your Q1 earnings and your Q1 report performance. How'd it go for you?
I think pretty good. You know, I think my CFO, Dan, he's described it as the valley for the year. We had stable operating performance. Sales were flat. EBITDA dipped a touch based on, the buildup ahead of New Jersey. And we're excited for the rest of the year. You know, we say this industry is about stair-step growth. And, you know, we've been kind of flat for the last couple quarters. And now, you know, New Jersey's been a huge hit. And we expect to ride that growth for the rest of the year. And that's, you know, that's the way we roll. We bring on assets. We scale up this business, and it's very stair-steppy. And I know investors, I think throughout the industry, have been a little frustrated by the flat industry performance of the next couple quarters, but we're ready to rock and roll. New Jersey's fabulous, and we've got a number of other opportunities behind that. I also would say that, for us, we are probably the smallest company relative to the, not the smallest, but smaller than the big MSOs with New Jersey exposure. So, for instance, if we can do $100 million or so out of our three stores, you know, that's off a $330 million base for 2021. And while Curaleaf and GTI are going to have great businesses off New Jersey, it's just off a much larger base. So we think, you know, so we've got a lot of leverage to that growth in New Jersey.
That's exciting. So we have a lot of cannabis investors that tune in, but we also have a lot of sector agnostic investors tune in. So you had a bit of an operational approach, it seems, to Q1, getting New Jersey online, having some canopies come online as well. Could you just give us a quick overview of the other markets that you're in as well?
Well, I think non-cannabis investors, or even really diehard cannabis investors, are agnostic at this point.
Touche. Touche.
At some point, after you get beat over the head day after day, you become agnostic to everything. we have a little bit of a different approach. We're in seven states, all of which are kind of the Northeast through the Midwest. And so, you know, from west to east, I think if I do it correctly, is Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts, and New Jersey. I think that, I don't know, it's close. And we really go, you know, we call ourselves MSO 2.0. You know, we were founded in 18, and we have an investment background, and we bought existing licenses in late stage medical and to basically build those assets out and turn them on for rec. Mm-hmm. You know, we think this is a very similar strategy to what legendary investors like John Malone and Ted Turner did in cable and cellular, where there's original license winners and they did a good job, but the next stage of consolidation and scaling just requires a different skill set. And so somebody like us can consolidate those assets. And so we think we have the best assets in the industry because we pick them. You know, we like the limited license states. We like that Northeast to Midwest corridor. We're focused on being a top five player in each of our states. And we think that kind of focused portfolio is going to make a lot of sense going forward. Also, when you look at our portfolio, you've got Illinois has been our biggest profit driver. Illinois is, you know, we did $100 million of EBITDA last year in Illinois and $80 million overall. So we incorporated, and every other state was in the investing mode, kind of on that J curve. And now we're in a period where we're bringing those assets, you know, up the J curve. New Jersey goes from, you know, flat profitability to massive profitability overnight. Mm-hmm. And we're going to roll that forward in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and New York over the next few years. So we're one of the few MSOs that show accelerating growth between 22 and 23. Obviously, we have to do it, but like, you know, so while other companies are kind of getting into that mature kind of cash flow generation, we're still in high growth mode here in the South.
This is a side note from your Q1 earnings here, as this is not really pertaining to it. But when speaking of an M&A strategy, I feel like you all have been pretty targeted across your life cycle, pretty strategic about it. Is that accurate? And would you expect 2022 to be more organic or inorganic growth if you can, you know, say much?
Yeah, sure. No, we want to stay within our core areas. So that's the Northeast and the Midwest, contiguous states primarily, and limited license. You know, we just in the last couple months really added Pennsylvania and New York, two of the largest states in our region, the two largest we're not involved in, 33+ million people combined. Both of those assets are paper assets with some limited assets. So we have our work cut out for us to turn those assets on. So I don't look to be doing any large acquisitions. I say that. I mean, you have to be opportunistic in a consolidating industry, so who knows? But, what we really want to do is fill in acquisitions. And when you look at it, Ohio is the state where we have some presence. We really want to get up to the cap. We really like Ohio. We have 8 stores in Illinois. We can go up to 10 by the cap. Michigan is a state that we've been reticent about, but now with our grow online, we're looking to do selective retail acquisitions to get a little bit more vertical. Contiguous states that we're not in, Connecticut, Maryland, Missouri, we'll look at them. But like I said, I mean, we really have our hands full with Pennsylvania and New York, and we really need to focus on execution.
Yeah, that's a great note. Thank you. All right, so let's move to maybe some more recent developments as well. Can you? It seems like a positive development in the Ascend Wellness MedMen saga. Is there anything you'd like to note on that as we kind of put that in our rear view?
Yeah, dead man is dead. We Darth Vader is defeated, and we're ready to move forward. So, I mean, this is all of us have sold things in our lives that at some point we realized we didn't want to sell, or we sold at too cheap a price. Mm-hmm. But most of us realize that we're governed by laws and morality, and we have to go through with those deals regardless. And that's life. Well, unfortunately, in this case, we ran into an unsavory group that really wanted to renegotiate the deal. And unfortunately, I mean, the American legal system is time consuming, and we really needed to move forward in New York. So, we paid them an additional fee of $15 million, but our total purchase price for the deal is $88 million. Only 74 of that gets paid now. And when you compare that, Scotts Miracle-Gro just paid $247 million for the NTN. The Verano transaction and others, we feel it's a really attractive price. New York's a really attractive state. So we're ready to move forward here.
Absolutely. That's great. Great note there. All right. Last but not least, we had a bit of breaking news yesterday, we'll say, with a lawsuit. I'm going to let you just tell us all about that.
Yeah. I mean, we at Ascend, and talking to our friends at other MSOs, are looking to file a suit over the next 2 or 3 months against the federal government and the Department of Justice. And on the basis that the Controlled Substance Act is unconstitutionally applied to the state legal cannabis industries. And just to be clear, there have been some constitutional challenges, Charlotte's Web and others, asking to deschedule marijuana from the Controlled Substance Act because marijuana is a great plant and blah, 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 which it is. But those constitutional challenges will all fail and have failed because the federal government can schedule and deschedule whatever they want. Mm-hmm. What they can't do is regulate intrastate commerce. And these are state legal businesses. And if the government wants to prevent interstate commerce of cannabis, according to the Controlled Substance Act, they can do so. But what they can't do is regulate interest rate business. And there's tremendous precedent lately. DraftKings basically went after the same issue, saying that the federal government couldn't regulate state sports gambling businesses. Back in 2012, Obamacare was struck down on this issue. Obamacare was allowed to go forward because of taxation, but they said, look, these are 50 state health insurance businesses. This is not the government's purview. And we think the same for state legal cannabis businesses. And if successful, it's very similar to like what the States Rights Act by Nancy Mace in the House is proposing, but we're just going at it through the judiciary. We have a very favorable court for the 10th Amendment and states' rights. I mean, unfortunately, we saw that recently with Roe v. Wade, but you have a court that time and time again is focused on the 10th Amendment and the rights of states as independent entities to control their view. So if successful, 280E goes away, we get federal bank accounts and we go to the exchanges right away. So it's a very powerful lawsuit. And we're hoping that state attorney generals will join us. You saw that Colorado and Arizona AGs made public statements. A number of others have gotten involved. And we think, you know, state attorney generals who are really on the side of this want to get it done. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, 280 and exchanges help the MSOs and some others. But, you know, the right to federal bank accounts and credit cards is killing everybody. And it's a safety issue, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we can argue about the unfairness from a business point of view all day long, but, you know, we have a safety issue with all this cash in these stores. And I can get a bank account as an MSO, but, you know, these mom and pops and social equity guys are really struggling. You know, I can spend a ton of money on security and I'm still at risk and my employees are at risk, but for the smaller players in this industry, it's terrible. And there is no purview in any business for the federal government to impose on state legal businesses. Now, the reason this exists was back in 2006, there was a case with the Supreme Court called Reich v. Gonzalez. And in that case, the California cannabis, I was a home grower at the time, wanted to be legal. And they were like, no, because the federal government using the Commerce Clause can regulate this. And the Commerce Clause basically says, look, I can't let Iowa wheat be separate because that's going to set the price. There's one wheat price around the United States. So even though you grow it in Iowa, it's really under the federal guidelines. But that clearly doesn't apply to cannabis. These are 39 state separate businesses. These states have put in place seed to sale tracking measures against diversion as well. So, and in 2006, none of that existed. So it's a different world. Secondly, Justice Thomas just wrote on this last year that in the 16 years subsequent to Reich, the federal government hasn't done anything. They haven't gone after state legal businesses. They haven't really enforced interstate commerce very effectively. So, the government can't selectively enforce laws. You know, they can't be arbitrary.
Well said. Yeah.
So, the fact that they haven't done anything for 16 years, they've really lost standing to on the state business. And thirdly, it's a different court. I mean, in 2006, it was a 6-3 decision. The dissenting voices were Thomas, Rehnquist, and O'Connor. Obviously, we have a 6-3 majority now in the conservative justices. And it fell in 6-3 to states' rights. And, you know, you had very conservative justices who probably have no interest in cannabis. And this lawsuit, which is why it's really a bipartisan and we'll get a lot of Republican support, you know, you can substitute cannabis with anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Justice Thomas said that. He said, what are we going to do, regulate quilting next? That's what he said in his 2006 decision. Like, you know, so it's about the federal government getting out of a state legal business, you know, full stop.
Cool. I love it. And it would affect the ruling that happened, what was it, yesterday in Pennsylvania about medical cannabis being a controlled substance. So that is, I look forward to seeing more on that. And Amner, props to you and the other MSOs for taking the lead on that, as I'm sure a lot of people on the non-quote-unquote corporate side would want to see that from the corporate side, for lack of a better term.
I mean, look, this industry, you know, we're all scaling a business and it's really hard, right? Every day is hard. Just A couple of days ago, we lost a corporate benefits program because that program is being bought by JP Morgan, and JP Morgan bank. So, you know, so I've got a finance department that's trying to consolidate acquisitions, scale a business, and they've got to run around and get a new vendor for some financing. And that goes on all over the industry. At the same time, you know, it's a new business. There aren't really SOPs around growing and everything else. We're all kind of, you know, building the plane as we fly it here. And but the industry needs to do more. Obviously, social equity and working with social equity players is certainly an area we need to do more. You know, working with groups like Last Prisoner Project, which we're involved in, to get some people who are unfairly still in prison for cannabis distribution out of jail. And we need to help change this. I mean, you know, I think we're figuring out that the Senate is just completely asleep at the switch. You know, Schumer, Booker, and Wyman, you know, they remind me of toddlers, right? Toddlers, you know, if they don't get their way, they're just going to scream and yell and hide in their room, right? And that's what the Democrats seem willing to do. They will accept nothing over something, and that's terrible. So, you know, hopefully by going through the judicial branch, hopefully we can change the conversation. I'm talking to other CEOs of cannabis companies. I hope they join us. We're going to talk to state AGs. And we're going to try, because I think besides just the legal aspect, hopefully this will move the conversation.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, and move the conversation in a way that the Congress realizes that they really need to do something.
Yeah. Well, Abner, appreciate it. You know, we're a little over time, but I think awesome, awesome update. Appreciate that from you. Congrats on getting started in New Jersey. I think Q2 is going to be exciting to watch, and the rest of the year, of course. Any last thoughts you want to pass to the audience as we wait to hear from you for another 3 months, my friend?
Yeah, well, you know, like I like to say these days, because, you know, I was a value investor for a long time. I have scars on my back. This is a tough period. I mean, there are no buyers for the space, completely divorced from fundamentals. But, you know, when I think about Ascend is, you know, I'm on a path to generate $200 million of EBITDA. And I've got a market cap, I think, around 550, 575. And so I don't know what the stock's going to do tomorrow. I don't even know what the stock's going to do in 6 months or 12 months. But I do know, if I generate the $200 million of EBITDA, my stock is worth a lot more than $550. So that's what I have to do as the CEO. And I think as investors, you know, we kind of need to, you know, take a deep breath, do yoga, whatever. But I think the thesis is in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Abner Curtin, CEO, Ascend Wellness, ticker AWHH on the OTC for all you U.S.-based investors out there.
Wait.
Yeah.
A-A-A-A-W-H.
A-A-W-H. A-A-W-H. You know what? I'm going to take the blame for that one. I'm pretty sure I got my double letter mixed up on that. A-A-W-H. This is why I say these things, so I can be corrected. Abner, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. You'll
never see the wrong ticker on Benzinga again. We'll see you soon, my friend.